Hello, and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 36. I'm Pam, and with me, as always, is Riley.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Riley. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm tired. I've been out all day in the sun.
I've been out all day, but not in the sun.
So today, we don't have a topic of discussion, but we do have a guest. She is a returning guest for the fourth time, I believe. It's Apple Cider Mage. Or Apple Cider Witch.
Witch?
Sorry.
Yes. Hello,
previously
hello.
Known as Mage.
Yeah. Yes. I got upgraded from Mage to Witch. So, you know, the paperwork finally went through.
Congratulations.
So thank you for joining us again.
Oh, a pleasure as always. I love being on this podcast.
We like having you. So do you want to spend some time talking about yourself for any new listeners who may not have heard you yet?
Okay. So for anybody who doesn't know me yet, I'm Apple Cider Witch, but my real name is Nico. I am a freelance games journalist / writer. You may have seen my work in places like Waypoint or Kotaku or Paste Games. I also have a Medium account, which is where I post writing that's been supported by my Patreon supporters, because I have one of those now. But you also may have seen a funny joke that I wrote on Twitter, and that's kind of what I do these days. I like talking about games and media in general and looking at them from a feminist perspective, but also just, you know, things that interest me. I also really like long walks on the beach. I'm a Cancer, and I love food.
All good things. So you recently put up an article on Medium, a quite lengthy article called Why Does Everyone Hate Mercy?, which is obviously about Overwatch. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? I thought it was a really interesting article. I enjoyed reading it.
Oh. Yeah, like what spurred writing about Mercy in particular? I'm like... And I'm asking, I know, but I want to hear it.
Okay, so when I started my Patreon account, one of my friends named Zach, who, you know, may hear this or not, I don't know, he's really big into competitive Overwatch, especially at the pro level. Like, he loves getting up at, like, 3 in the morning to watch matches from like Lunatic High over in South Korea. He's real big into that scene, and he asked me straight out, one of the first things you should write about for Patreon is talking about Mercy one tricks and kind of the culture of playing support in the competitive Overwatch scene. I said, okay, sure, that sounds like kind of an interesting topic. I play Mercy a lot. Okay, cool. Okay, I'll do that. And what became something I thought would just be like, quickly write about Mercy or whatever, turned into a month-long, 3,000-word, like, episode of my life. Was not expecting to write so much words about Mercy, but the more that I looked into it and the more that I researched and the more that I kind of was reading posts from other people and Reddit and, you know, different places, I just, like, a lot of people really just don't like Mercy as a character, and I kind of tried to tackle so many different things at once in this essay that it kind of like got away from me like really quickly. But I tried to look at a bunch of different things as to why people don't like Mercy in the Overwatch community, which is funny because I had so many people telling me, like, I had no idea nobody liked Mercy because I love Mercy. And I was like, well, I definitely love Mercy. She's one of my favorite characters to play. She's one of my favorite characters from, like, a story perspective. But a lot of people do really hate her. And I think it's a combination of things. I think it's a bunch of different reasons, and it spans from, you know, people being extremely sexist and xenophobic towards women in competitive gaming. It spans how we think and talk about skill in competitive multiplayer games. And it also focuses on how Blizzard itself has kind of broken its own competitive skill rating mechanics in Overwatch. So it's a lot of different things going on, and I tried my best to try and like loop it all together. I don't know if I did a 100% perfect job on it, but it was a lot of fun looking into all this different stuff and actually getting to writing about it. I felt like it was like one of the first times that I really kind of tackled a topic in such a profound and lengthy way in my writing career, so it was a lot of fun to do it like that.
Yeah, I really liked how you touched on so many different aspects. There was some stuff that I read, like I play Mercy a lot, and regarding skill ratings, and I don't know, there seems to be a way for Mercies to sort of game that to get high skill ratings without necessarily helping their team, which I totally actually still don't really understand how one can do that.
Yeah, it's a complicated topic, and it's something that I only ever see really high-end players talking about, but a lot of it has to do with the way that skill rating is calculated, and a lot of this is speculation because we just don't know, because Blizzard doesn't 100% talk about it in specifics. Like, they don't ever give algorithms, they don't talk about the numbers. Yeah. But mm-hmm. one of the things that happens is that Mercy, when you play in competitive, the way that your skill rating goes up or down is based on a very complicated set of things. One of those things is actually it judges your performance versus the performance of every other person who plays that hero in competitive.
Right.
And so you're thinking, well, why would Mercy jump up and down skill rating so fast? Because a lot of people play Mercy. And that's where the idea of one-tricking kind of comes into it, is that a lot of players, what they'll do is they will get an account specifically to just play Mercy in competitive, mm-hmm. and they will play Mercy and play Mercy and play Mercy. And so sort of theoretically, the idea is that if you one trick Mercy and you only play that character, you are going to play Mercy at a higher level than most other people who play her in competitive, even at the highest levels of the game, because you just have that experience, you have that hours. Like, if you play 500 hours of Mercy, it stands to reason that you're probably going to be better than somebody who plays 50 hours of Mercy, but has a spread across like five or six different characters and can kind of flex a bit, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea is that somebody like that will often duo or trio with two like DPS smurfs, or DPS mains of some variety, and stick with them in order to rapidly gain a ton of like defensive and offensive assists. You'll be on fire a lot more, so you can artificially inflate your performance on top of also playing the character a number of hours over other people, so you can kind of elbow your way up the ratings really quickly. Even with a low win rating, which is where people actually get a lot more mad, is that like there are Mercies who are Grandmaster who have a sub 50% win rate, or wow. like even as low as like 25% or 30% win rate.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I can see where the salt might be coming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's like, and that's the fascinating part. And that's the part I came to the latest and took me a really long time to try and understand, which is why it's like kind of at the end of my essay. And I got a lot of flack for it because competitive players like, you don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I'm trying, guys. I'm trying. And but it is really interesting. And it's something that I actually kind of want to revisit as its own thing, because it is a really interesting phenomenon. And I think that that's actually like a valid criticism of, I feel like that's a valid criticism, but it being focused on Mercy players, taking advantage of it versus the game itself being broken is like, I find that really interesting. And, it kind of comes into the soup of why people hate Mercy players, and I don't think it's always 100% fair to take what seems to be sort of very different methods of behavior, like breaking skill rating, and sort of mixing that up with some of the other criticisms of Mercy, which are a little bit more dubious, like, you know, that, you know, women only play Mercy and therefore Mercy is for low skill players, and that a healing support character with a healing beam is also a low skill character, and therefore women play a low skill character because they are bad at competitive. Like, you can kind of see where mushing those things all together is a little bit less credible. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there are some. There are some genuine criticisms of the character, like what you just explained to us, which I, as I said, didn't know was a thing that happened. And then the other thing you mentioned is the whole run and hide and run in and res thing, which I personally hate so much. Every time someone tells me to hide, I'm just like, oh, like, can I play, please?
It's not dynamic in the slightest.
No,
it's not,
it's
fun.
Not fun.
It's not fun. It really isn't. And I really want to be clear, because I think some people didn't quite get that from me, is that when I say run and hide, I don't mean like doing the smart thing, which is if you see the situation going sideways, you like duck around a wall real quick and still like continue to heal your tank or something like that. I mean, people, Mercies at the, you know, the top 500 level are specifically like sitting in a room somewhere else while every team fight that their team participates in is 5v6, and all they do is sit and run in and res. Like,
yeah.
We're like, there's two very different, like, you know, things that we're talking about here. A Mercy that understands moment to moment positioning and can keep herself out of harm's way, that's frustrating, and I understand that as a Mercy player. Yeah, like seeing a Mercy swoop in because your team didn't kill her in the ult of the team fight. Yeah, I understand how shitty that feels. I've seen it 1,000 times. I've seen it on the opposite team myself. That's part of playing the game, though. Now, a Mercy sitting in a room by herself doing nothing. Yeah, that's infuriating. And I understand that.
Yeah. I found playing Mercy, like, I know you purposely chose a sort of attention-grabbing title, because I don't think everyone hates Mercy, but I think everyone has very strong feelings. Mm-hmm. Like, I have had a lot of teams that are very, very appreciative of having a good Mercy, but then Mercy also feels like the character that I get the most feedback on, that everyone thinks they know it better than me, and they should tell me how I should be playing. Mercy, res. Mercy, why didn't you res? Mercy, why did you res that? Mercy, why aren't you hiding? Mercy, where are you? Like, Jesus. Like, just, I find that's the my biggest thing with Mercy. Just like,
Mercy,
everyone,
why do you have your pistol out?
Yeah.
I get that a lot. And I'm like, what do you, like, you don't need to be healed. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Maybe if you'd kill the Genji.
It's always the Genji. It's always the Genji.
Yeah.
That you're not killing.
Yeah. Like, I don't tell Genji how to do his job. So.
Yeah. You know, like, Genji, stop, like, dying all the time. Genji, stop running away from the rest of the, you know, people on the payload, that sort of thing. Like, yeah. And that's where I think a lot of the kind of sociocultural and sort of ideas around the culture of competitive gaming kind of comes into play, in that Mercy is a character that 100% breaks the traditional competitive gaming mold of skill as meritocracy sort of idea, in that she does not typically use traditional first-person shooter skills to play. You're not typically shooting your gun. It doesn't require aiming to use her beam. So I think a lot of people look at Mercy players as, because the skill floor is so low on her, they automatically assume that you are there to kind of just take orders and to heal people, and that you are not an independent thinker or a talented player in the slightest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've definitely been on the receiving end of some of those comments.
Yeah, which is really funny to me, because if you watch a streamer like Evie, who is a top 500 Mercy main, I've seen him do things that no other Mercy does, or, you know, very only the best Mercies in the world do, which is like stuff like he somehow knows when ults are going to be popped off at some point. So, like, I saw him in a clip from Twitch. He knew that the Reaper was somewhere and was going to drop down with his ult. So he worked it out with the Lucio to make sure that the Lucio on King's Row at the end, in the end part, for people who don't play Overwatch, this is a map that's like a mixed payload map, and they have to push it to the end. And there is an end part where the cart rolls in. And there's a lot of places that you can get knocked off and die due to environmental damage, because there's like holes in the floor. He set it up with the Lucio to make sure that if a Reaper dropped down and popped off an ult, that he was going to jump over the side to avoid the ult and then use the Lucio to fly back up to the platform. And it happened, and it worked. And that's just like,
that's beautiful.
Yeah. If you don't think that's talent and skill
and smart, like, gameplay, like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, sincerely beautiful to watch, but also kind of gives me hope that, like, whenever somebody's trashing me because I didn't do what they wanted, you know, that, like, I think about that clip. I think about Evie doing that, and just, like, you know, I'm like, I could be that good one day, you know. And but yeah, I think a lot of people view Mercy as, because she's viewed as so easy, anybody could do it, that means that everybody that plays Mercy is incapable of being a smart, talented player who does a shit ton of work to keep a team alive, you know, and uses her ult, yeah. You know, uses her ult strategically and things like that. It galls me quite a bit, you know, because people do not talk to soldiers or Genjis that way. Or Reinhardt's, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Playing a support class is a thankless job sometimes. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. All right. I guess we can go on to what we've been up to. Riley, do you want to start? Since...
Sure.
We're changing things up this time.
What have I been doing? Okay. Let's see. I actually, in preparation for this episode, ended up watching a lot of shows and movies on Netflix. Yay!
Yay.
So I got around to watching Glow.
Awesome.
The Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. I actually didn't know that it was based on a real thing. So now I want to go watch the documentary.
Yeah, I saw that on Netflix too. I've got that on my list, but I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea. I thought it was really good. I mean, I had a weird thing with, like, the main character. Is it Alison Brie? Is that the
actress? Yeah, Alison Brie. Yeah, that's
right. I don't know. There's something about her that I was like, I'm not into you as a wrestling lady. I wasn't sure if I liked her acting, but I don't know. But everybody else was awesome. All the ladies were so cool. Plus, like, there was one of the times where her friend was, like, describing why she liked wrestling, and she was saying it's because, like, she's using her body and, like, exercising her body, like, for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my god, yes. Like, like, everything that they were doing was, like, it was just for themselves. Like, they were, you know, like, when people are, like, when you dress for yourself, or when you, like, do things for yourself, like, it feels so good. And I was like, oh my god, that line is just, yes, like, get buff for yourself.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite parts of the show. And I also loved how all the way through with Alison Brie and Betty Gilpin. Their relationship was just handled really well, mm-hmm. I think. Like, mm-hmm. there was always this, like, we've been friends for a long time, but something's happened. And, like, you could feel Betty Gilpin be like, oh, I want to forgive you. I want to be friends again, but I'm not there yet. Can't. And I felt like the whole time they really did a good job with that.
Yeah. It felt real. Like, mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. I mean, that felt to me like a really good part of the writing, was just the women were saying things that I could really relate to. Like, really relate to. And even though it's a show about, like, starting up an underground wrestling league, you know, like, which is definitely not something I have any experience with. But they're all, like, real, real women who are like, I'm worried about this sort of stuff. Or Alison Brie's character is not a likable person. No. But she's not mm-hmm. unlikable in an unsympathetic way. She's unlikable in a way that we're all kind of familiar with, which is, like, sometimes we do shitty stuff to our friends. And hurt mm-hmm. our friends. And it's a complicated thing. And I like that they had this, like, very real friendship in a way that, like, felt like it was written. And I'm of the understanding that the show was written by women and directed by women. So mm-hmm. I'm not surprised. But, like, it felt like the kind of actual real shit that happens when, like, you're friends with another woman and it doesn't work out very well, or you have, like, a fight, or you have this, like, insurmountable, like, emotional rift between the two of you, and you still have to maintain, like, this kind of professional relationship on some level. So it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know, there's just so many moments about it that were just very heartfelt and very real. And I like that all of the women on the show felt like they were these very distinctive personalities, and mm-hmm. that was okay. It was okay that all of them were different, and all of them had, like, hang-ups and flaws and weird quirks and shit like that. And it didn't feel like I was an outsider watching the show. It definitely felt like I was watching people that I could be friends with, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. They all, and it didn't feel, I don't know, like they were just making anyone different or quirky just for the sake of it. Like, they all were pretty well developed, even the ones who got less screen time.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Apple Cider, what have you been watching or doing?
Oh god.
That you want to talk about next?
What haven't I been watching? Yeah. I've watched so much television because it's the summer, and that's, like, a great time to watch television because it's a great time to, like, catch up on all of the shows and stuff that you're not usually watching because there's, like, scheduled programming every night of the week. Mm-hmm. So I caught up on last season of Parts Unknown with Anthony Bourdain, which was one of my favorite travel shows. And I watched Glow as well. Billions, which is my new hot fave show on Showtime. Master of None on Netflix.
What is what is Billions? I've seen it. I've seen, like, the name, but I have never seen an episode.
Not something I thought I'd get into, but it's a show about the, like, machinations between the U.S. attorney of the Southern District of New York City against a, like, $8 billion value hedge fund manager from Connecticut.
Oh. Oh, well, I could see how that would draw you in.
And it sounds really dry on paper, but it's actually really good. It's a really good show. And I thought that I wouldn't like it because the prestige drama that fixates on white men being white collar criminals or otherwise is kind of played out, and I don't like it very often much because, like, Breaking Bad was fixated on a guy who was legitimately a shithead, and mm-hmm. and Sopranos was fixated on a guy who is legitimately a shithead, and Billions is about two guys who are shitheads, but in a nuanced way. So I like it. It's basically a cat and mouse between Paul Giamatti's character, who plays the U.S. attorney, and I don't know the actor's name, but it's weirdly enough, he plays an American who's from, he plays in, like, the actor is actually British and, like, very, like, upper class, and plays, like, rugged, like, blue collar accent, New York, you know, like, New York, Boston accent sort of Americans, like, really well. Mm-hmm. He's apparently really good at this, which is kind of funny to me. But he plays a rough and tumble guy that basically profited off of 9/11 in the stock market, because he's apparently this, like, mega aggressive but extremely intelligent hedge fund trader. And it's very obvious from the jump that he has procured a lot of his wealth through some not very legitimate means in the stock market. Mm-hmm. So think Wolf of Wall Street and The Big Short. Basically, it sort of references some of the things that people might now be familiar with if they've paid any attention to the actual real financial crisis, which was based a lot on, like, future trading and packaging up subprime mortgage loans. It's not really about that, but it's about some of the other stuff that's gone on in the financial sector over the past, like, decade or two, which is a lot of very aggressive short selling, which, to people who might not be aware, and I had to look this up myself, short selling is a process by which a trading firm borrows shares of a company that they do not currently own. So they borrow those shares from another trader that has those shares and buys them up, or, you know, borrows them on the sort of advance knowledge or prediction that the price of the stock is going to fall rapidly in a very short way. So they borrow it to basically drive the price up, and then they, you know, like, they it's something very complicated with financial stuff, but basically they make a lot of profit off of it. And
yeah,
that's fine, and that's a legal thing to do in the stock market, except if you have advanced knowledge that other people don't about why a stock might fall. That's where the SEC steps in, and that's where prosecutors like a U.S. attorney would step in to look into financial fraud. And that's kind of the whole pivot of the show, is that the hedge fund guy is this kind of turbulent personality all on his own, and it's very cat and mouse against the U.S. attorney, and it's about their kind of, like, both of their obsession with each other in terms of, like, wanting to completely fuck up the other one's life and sort of what mm-hmm. happens from there. But the cast of characters on that show, including both of the guys' wives, which I found really interesting, all have their own personalities, all have their own sort of pieces on the board as far as this whole thing is concerned. And for the two seasons that I watched that are currently on Amazon right now, I found it an extremely compelling show, despite it being about things I know zero about at all. So,
that's cool. Mm-hmm. That it sounds kind of like The Big Short, where I had no idea, but it ended up being quite entertaining.
Yeah, I mean,
depressing.
And also depressing.
Extremely. We're talking about one of the main characters you're supposed to sort of grapple with your sympathy for, who is an unabridged capitalist. He is a capitalist in the very pure sense. Well, he will fuck people over if it means that he profits off of it. And you're supposed, like, it's a very hard character to like or get into mm-hmm. because he basically represents the 1% or the 1% of the 1%. He's that rich, and he represents a lot of the, like, unfettered greed that a lot of the financial sector had, except that, like, the reason that he's so fascinating is because it's very obvious that he got where he was from a very different starting position than many other people in the financial sector, and therefore he's cutthroat in a way that a lot of rich people aren't portrayed. So it's really fascinating. Whereas the U.S. attorney, Paul Giamatti's character, he is rich, and he's from a rich background. He is from a very rich, moneyed background and got to where he was because he's very shrewd and a very calculating political player, but he's also super rich, and he's a trust fund kid. And so it's these two sort of really interesting dynamics sort of playing off each other, and there's just a lot going on in the show that I really enjoyed. Like, the women characters are all given a lot of screen time and their own sort of issues. They're not, like, kind of relegated to, like, the nagging antagonistic wife that, like, gets in the way of all the crime, I guess. And they're very interesting in their own rights. The show also prominently features the only non-binary character I've ever seen on television. Which was named Taylor, who is played by a non-binary actor as well. And they have, like, a, you know, like, they have very nuanced dialogue about, you know, Taylor's first day, which is, you know, these are my pronouns, please don't fuck that up, you know, that sort of thing. And Taylor turns out to be, like, a really interesting character by the end of the second season and that sort of thing. So yeah, I would really highly recommend it to anybody, because it's a really fascinating show. So
awesome, that sounds really cool. So one of the shows that I've been watching is called Claws, which is on its first season. It hasn't even completed its first season yet, but it's about five manicurists in Florida. And the main one is played by Niecy Nash, and her name is Desna, and she's trying to, like, build a better life for her and her brother, who depends on her, and she's trying to get a nicer nail salon in a nicer area. So she starts laundering money for the Dixie Mafia, who is headed up by Dean Norris as a character who goes by the name Uncle Daddy. And she and Desna is also sleeping with Uncle Daddy's nephew, who he, like, treats like a son, who's, like, one of his high-powered drug dealers. So it's all about this group of five women, and in addition to Desna, there's Polly, who's played by Carrie Preston, and she's, like, a con artist who just got out of jail, and there is a woman named Anne, who is, like, the strong, silent type one, and is also provides the muscle anytime that's needed. And then Desna's best friend is married to one of Uncle Daddy's sons. And then there's a new girl whose name is Virginia, and she worked for Uncle Daddy as a prostitute, and now she is doing nails for Desna. So it's this very kind of ridiculous, but really enjoyable show. Like, everything has, like, this air of trashiness to it, but in a pretty fun way. It has, there are some sort of wild tone shifts, but in general, I'm really enjoying it. It's sort of been compared to Breaking Bad, and of course having Dean Norris in it makes me think of Breaking Bad. Yeah. But I'm really liking it so far. That my main issue with it is that the guy Roller, everything involved with him is just, like, I don't know, maybe, like, a step too far off the deep end. But I really love the five main characters. And there's also one thing that makes me love it so much is that a couple times there's been, like, dance segments, like, where they all dance. They got some good news and they did this big, like, choreographed dance to Lady Marmalade. And then there was also a part with a synchronized swimming routine. So it's really a lot of fun. I think there's another three episodes still in this first season. Riley, what else have you been watching?
I finished Orange is the New Black, the new season, like way behind everyone else.
That's okay. What'd you think of it?
I mean, I find that the show suffers from having, like, their quote-unquote main character be, like, so incredibly boring that I don't, like, I just want to, like, fast forward through all of her scenes, but, like, everybody that she talks to, like, might have something important that they're going to be saying, so I'm like, I gotta
watch
it. Like, I just don't care about Piper anymore. Yeah. Like, I care about everybody else. Like, I found, like, I really liked Red's whole story this season, like, where she kind of ends up on drugs somehow. And then,
oh, yeah.
And, like, is doing all of the things that, like, that Nichols, like, would have done and was, like, accusing her of doing. And so you kind of, like, see her go through all the things that she was, like, worried about Nichols for. And I thought that was really interesting, like, just seeing that kind of switch around and having Nichols take care of her. But, like, through no fault of Red's, really, because somehow she ended up on, like, prescription-level speed from somebody else giving it to her. So,
yeah, she got her vitamins.
Yeah. Also, like, I thought her background story from Russia was really interesting, too. Like, she was there kind of, like, it's, like, during a revolution and left for America, like, during that time. And I was like, I want to learn more about that. Like, show me more of that. like, basically any character other than Piper I want to see more of and, like, keep seeing more of. I hope they catch a break at some point, those girls in the show, because, like, man.
Me too. This whole season, because the season was all over the course of a couple days during the prison riot, and I just, as I watched, I just kept thinking, like, how are they going to get out of this? And at one point it was like, oh, maybe something's actually going to get better for them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't.
No. No, they, like, nothing goes well for them. And, I mean, I guess that's, I don't know if that's indicative of, like, what the actual prison systems are like, because I don't actually know a lot about that in Canada or in the U.S. So, I mean, I feel like, I don't know how representative it is.
It's bad. There was an article this week about a private prison threatening to close if they didn't send 300 more inmates
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, the U.S. is extremely fucked up when it comes to the carceral system. Like, it's... I have... All of my experience with the prison system in the U.S. is non-privatized prisons, because those are a whole other beast in and of themselves. Orange is the New Black struck me as a little bit, obviously it's fantasy and it's a little bit television prison, even for a minimum security prison, for women, but yeah, prison riots tend to not go over so well for the prisoners when everything is said and done. And yeah, that prisons in the United States are, not great places in general.
Yeah, like, I wish that things had worked out differently in the show, but, like, yeah, because they were talking about, like, being able to actually get their GED and, like, have a proper education program, and, like, I don't know, just because people are in prison doesn't mean they don't deserve to have those things, so, yeah.
Especially since so many of them are in for...
minor infractions,
nothing, basically.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, like, it makes me want to learn more about what's actually going on, because I feel like I don't know enough about that kind of stuff. So, yeah. But on the show level,
I don't care about Piper. Please make her go.
She's not likable. She's not likable at all. And I understand the value of not likable main characters, because it's one of the things that I thought was really interesting about Glow.
Yeah.
Is that I didn't like the main character in Glow. I didn't think she was like a very nice person. But she was still interesting. Piper is not interesting.
No. Yeah. There's a big difference between those two, for sure.
It makes me wonder, like, have I just become more aware of things? Because in season one, I didn't hate her. Was she always terrible, or have I just become a better person?
She's overstayed her welcome, maybe?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know how you can handle some people in 5-minute increments?
Yeah. Mm. She's one of those.
She's one of those people. Like, you just... When Piper works well, when you haven't quite realized that the rest of the ensemble cast is so much better, and you wish the show was just about them.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah, exactly. Versus her bullshit, which is complete bullshit. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Apple Cider, what else have you been watching?
Like I said, Master of None, Twin Peaks, The Return, which is...
Talk to me about Twin Peaks. I gave up after 2 episodes.
I made it to episode 8.
Isn't that where things get really weird?
Yes. 8 or 9? Yeah. I'm 2 episodes behind right now. I have to catch up, and I'm really trying. But man, all David Lynch all the time. All David Lynch and Mark Frost all the time is really hard. And back when the original show aired, they had other people writing the scripts. And I think that was kind of what made the show quirky and goofy versus, like, this is full Mark Frost and David Lynch all the time. Which means you get unwatchable segments that are 10 minutes long and incomprehensible and...
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little on Twitter back when it first started up, and it was just like, it's missing the likable, quirky character part of it, and it's just gone into, like, all weird all the time.
Yeah, it's serious now, which is, like, I understand a lot of the old Twin Peaks was serious, too, like, the whole Laura Palmer thing, very serious, like, that's a serious part of the show, but, like... This is all serious, and maybe it's changed in the 2 episodes I haven't seen yet, but, like, I want Dale Cooper to be Dale Cooper again. I don't want this, like, doppelganger, and I don't want Dougie, and I don't want, like, whatever else. I want Dale Cooper. I want to see some of the plot threads kind of converge on each other a lot more. Like, I just want a little bit more regular television versus, like, David Lynch cut 18 hours out of whatever he shot and turned it into a TV show. Like, you know? And I appreciate David Lynch's sensibilities, and I respect him as an artistic director. Like, I respect that, and I respect Mark Frost for building this incredible world, but, like, whew, woof. Hard sell. Hard sell. It's hard to watch. Hard to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. David Lynch works really well when he's working within the time frame of a movie. And not so much as, like, an episodic television show. It'll be good when this show is streamable. Mm-hmm. And you can just run right through it. It's not right now.
I feel like running right through it would also have its own downsides, though.
Yeah, probably. It's an acquired taste. It's not the thing that makes me go, oh man, I'm so excited for the next episode. Like, if you want to know my, like, truest opinion, I am more excited rethinking about maybe going back to watching Game of Thrones versus watching Twin Peaks.
Wow.
And I quit Game of Thrones like 2 seasons ago. Like,
I remember.
Yeah, I was angry. Yes. So, like, I have a feeling I may have permanently dropped off Twin Peaks, but I may pick it back up. I don't know. Like, that and then I'll watch something like iZombie. I'll catch up on iZombie, and I'm extremely happy to watch that show, even though it's like half the production values of something like Twin Peaks. It's a CW show about zombies in Seattle, and I find that show like 10 times more compelling than Twin Peaks, you know, even though it's not considered like high art or whatever like that. It's just better written and funnier, and it's a police procedural that doesn't feel like a police procedural, and it's got a lot of really great character driven elements, and I don't know, like maybe I'm not as highbrow as I thought I used to be or something like that. Yeah.
It's nice to watch those kind of things, though. Yeah. One of the shows that I just finished watching is Gallivant, which is a fantasy musical.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And it's a lot of fun. It's like your basic, you know, medieval fantasy about a knight, and there's lots and lots of singing, and the songs are actually pretty good, and I enjoyed it a lot. Unfortunately, it got canceled after 2 seasons, so I only watched, I think, 18 episodes of it, but I really liked it. It was like a nice little break for my brain from all of the other stuff that we've been watching and talking about and things. It sort of starts out with this knight, Gallivant, and he's in love with this fair maiden, Maddalena. And then the king sees Maddalena and thinks she's beautiful and basically kidnaps her. So Gallivant stages this big rescue. But when he gets there, Maddalena's like, you know, I kind of like this being rich and powerful and living in a castle thing. I think maybe I'll be the queen. So it sort of goes from there, and she becomes like the villain of the show. But it was a lot of fun. I thought, I'm just basically a sucker for any kind of musical or dance numbers.
Have you checked out Crazy Ex-Girlfriend yet?
No, I have that on my list, but it's not streaming anywhere that I have access to it, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, I forgot you're in Canada. Because I was going to say, it's on U.S. Netflix, and it's on U.S. Amazon Prime Video, but yeah, it might be a U.S. only.
Oh, is it on Prime?
I haven't looked.
I haven't looked for it there. I'll give that a chance. I mean, I can get it. But yeah, that's on my list. I want to watch that as well.
Yeah, I wasn't going to ever watch that show because when it first came out, I was like, I saw the title and I was like, but then a lot of my friends were really into it, and I said, well, if they really like it, I must like it, and it's actually a really good show, and I've since listened to, like, a bunch of podcasts with the creator, who's this, like, wonderful woman comedian, and, like, her, and have listened about her writing process and her song creation process and the characters that are on the show, and really fell in love with it. Also, they have a Spice Girls send-up that's about world domination as a group of friends who are women, and it's a great awesome. Song. Yeah, it's a great song. It's like so I thought that like it's got a really cheeky sense of humor. So yeah, like I'm actually really enjoying the fact that we have space in primetime television for shows that have musical numbers in them again.
Mm-hmm.
That aren't glee.
That aren't clean. Oh man, I watched the whole run of Glee, and I loved it in season one, and then I sort of started hating it, but I watched it anyway.
Yeah, season two was a hate watch, and I gave up around season three, I think, of Glee. Oh man,
probably for the best. Yeah. It doesn't get better.
Yeah, as soon as they all decided, as soon as they were all old enough to like go off to college, I didn't care anymore, and it sucked because I was definitely invested for Britannia, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, man, I'm just glad that the musical trend stuck around versus dying with Glee.
Yeah, me too. Riley, what else have you watched?
I sat down and I sat through 2 hours of Hacksaw Ridge, which is like mm-hmm. a Mel Gibson directed war movie.
Huh. Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. Like, I didn't realize that it was directed by Mel Gibson until I was, like, an hour in, and I'm like, man, like, who, like, what is going on? So I, like, Googled it, and I was like, oh, yeah, of course. It's, like, I, like, the story, the true story behind it is really interesting. Like, it's based around Desmond Doss, who was a conscientious objector. I didn't even know that that was a thing. So he signed up for the military and, like, won't touch a gun based on religious beliefs. Hmm. So he, like, joins under the impression that he can be a combat medic without having to do that. And so it kind of follows him during that portion of, like, boot camp training where, like, his entire unit thinks that he's, like, an idiot, basically. Mm-hmm. And they try to get him, like, kicked out. Or, like, not kicked out, but, like, they try to make it so that he voluntarily leaves. But, like, to get somebody to voluntarily leave, they, like, basically, like, they beat him up. And they do, like, I would say, like, psychological warfare on him, kind of. Mm-hmm. But he, like, keeps persisting and eventually does make it to, like, actual combat. And it's the Battle of Okinawa, and, like, Hacksaw Ridge, I guess, is part of what the U.S. Army was trying to take to, like, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know a lot about World War II. I should know more, but it's only, like, all the Canadian stuff that I know. I know very little of the American side, so... and he ends up being, like, their combat medic, and, he, like, goes into battle with them. It's, like, a complete massacre, and then he pulls, like, 75 men over the course of a night, like, out of the battlefield, and, like, lowers them down a gigantic cliff, like, one by one, like, after everybody else has pulled out. So they think, like, that they've lost all these people, and then, like, people just slowly start getting lowered down the ridge. So they kind of, like, change their views on his not wanting to touch a gun type deal. And it's actually, like aside from having a slower buildup to, like, all of the combat and the combat being super gory, it wasn't too bad. Like I really, like, wanted to know more about the actual people behind that story. Like I wanted to know more about, like, conscientious objectors and, like, how that gets dealt with, because, like, especially in World War II, I can see how that would be really difficult to even get somebody in there that won't mm-hmm. like, that wouldn't touch a gun. But, yeah, I, like, it was a long movie, but it wasn't, like, the worst, but it was still, like, super gory, and, like, I almost fell asleep a couple times until it got to, like, the actual battlefield stuff, but, yeah. And someone, I said on Twitter, like, oh, it was, you know, it wasn't, like, the best movie that I've ever seen, like, blah, 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 and then someone was like, oh, like, Band of Brothers and the Pacific... are, like, even better. And I was like, okay, Band of Brothers is a masterpiece, so, like, you can't include it with this movie in the same sentence. And then I was like, if you think I haven't seen Band of Brothers, like, 5 times over, you're wrong. But, yeah, I want Mel Gibson to go away, first of all.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, like, second of all, I want someone to, edit his movies better, because boy, it didn't need to be like 2 hours long. But yeah, I want to know the real story, like the real story behind Mr. Desmond Doss. I want to know more about him.
I wonder if there's a book. There's probably books, maybe.
Ooh, yeah, I would imagine there's got to be
books, or at least a history podcast episode of some variety.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So many history podcasts out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a good idea. Apple Cider, what else have you been up to that you want to talk about?
Not too much more. I've actually been able to get it to watch a lot of movies, which makes me happy. Like, I just saw Atomic Blonde yesterday. I also saw Spider-Man Homecoming. I also saw Baby Driver. So, I've watched more movies in the past, 2 months in the theaters than I have in, the past year. So, that's pretty exciting. I like that there's a couple of films coming out that just aren't retreads or terrible franchise movies or redos or... what's that word that means the thing that comes... sequels?
Sequels, yes. Yeah.
I'll make an exception for the Spider-Man movie because I'm fully committed to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is I didn't see the Guardians of the Galaxy, the second one, yet, because I didn't want to go pay money for that in the theater, so I'll probably catch it on streaming. But I am really excited about the upcoming Thor movie. Yes. And definitely Black Panther. Oh, I want to see Black Panther so bad. I also watched Doctor Strange on streaming, which was that is trash and garbage. That is trash garbage. That is one of the worst films I have ever seen in my life.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's just bad. It's just so bad. I don't like Benedict Cumberbatch.
The movie doesn't
have a script. It's badly edited. It's racist. It's just there's just nothing good about it. And so the fact that it gets to be part of the cinematic universe is just vomit. Okay, whatever. But it's a really good summer for movies that aren't just the 100% giant, blockbuster, which is great. I thought Baby Driver was a really good film that is in the vein of the I think, not indie movies, but movies that are getting a more broader appeal, but that still have a deep sense of appreciation for the filmic format when it comes to scoring, soundtrack, editing, timing, direction, acting. I think
that's Edgar Wright.
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Who is clearly a very talented person. Oh man, Hot Fuzz is one of my top 10 favorite films of all time. So that's good. Just such a good movie, and I love all of his stuff. And Edgar Wright is right up there with Guillermo del Toro, even though they have wildly different directorial styles and wildly different expectations for scripts and stuff like that. But I feel like the both of them are doing some really actual, unique, original things with the filmic form and are also well-known auteurs in that respect. So I'm excited about that. I also saw the trailer for The Shape of Water, which is the new Guillermo del Toro movie coming out. And even though it's, funnily reminiscent of Hellboy in a lot of ways, the fact that he's taking those things to make an original property is, really cool. I don't know. I love films a lot. And
yeah, there's this really great episode of, I think it's Every Frame of Painting,
yes,
on YouTube.
Oh, so
about
good.
How about how Edgar Wright is one of the only comic directors, yes, who actually says something with the camera and his editing.
Oh, absolutely. That was I think that everybody should watch Every Frame of Painting as a series, but particularly the episode about Edgar Wright, because I've seen a lot of comedy films, and Tony, who makes the series, is absolutely 100% correct that, like, comedic films are no longer, they're not comedies. They're not funny because of the film. They're funny because of, like, two people talking to each other, and that's boring as shit, versus, like, something like Hot Fuzz, which obviously gets used very much in the YouTube video, about how to convey a sense of comedic timing and a sense of comedic information through just quick cuts, camera pans, camera zooms, sound effects, things like that, little details like that, that are so hilarious, and it reveals to you that there's ways of being funny that have nothing to do with the dialogue, and in fact, it does. You don't have to have dialogue at all, whatsoever.
Yeah, that was a great. I'm sad that there haven't been any new episodes on that channel for
same
a time.
It's really good, but I imagine they take a really long time to make. So
yeah, for sure. So I watched a couple other things. I watched The Path, which is a series about a cult, I guess, called Meyerism, and people within this cult. It stars Aaron Paul as the lead, and it's also got Hugh Dancy and Michelle Monaghan. Woo-hoo! And Hugh Dancy can't stop being a weirdo. He is sort of the de facto leader of this cult, while their actual leader is apparently off on some a vision quest or something, whatever he's supposed to be doing. And it's a really good series. I sort of realized how much I missed seeing Aaron Paul.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't particularly like Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad, but I miss seeing him on screen, and he does a really good job as, like, someone who sort of his beliefs have been shaken, and how he sort of deals with it since his family, like his wife has lived her whole life in this cult, and she's deep into it. So I really liked The Path. Sarah recommended it to me, but unfortunately I can't watch season 2 on Prime for some reason. So
is Hulu not available in Canada?
Nope.
No.
My god, I feel so bad for you guys. You're listening all the TV. Season 2 of The Path is so good.
How do you Canadians watch anything?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to smuggle, like, DVDs to you across the border. The Path is really good for tackling a topic that is, like, very verboten in U.S. culture. Like, obviously, there's tons of documentaries about cults, but it's never really been the subject of a long-running prestige television show. Obviously, it got made through Hulu, so they didn't have to really, like, adhere to the sort of strictures of, like, television, like, cable mm-hmm. television. So I really found that they really got to do, like, a real deep dive on it. And it's obviously got touches of, like, actual cults in our country, like Scientology and things like that. But really good character acting. Aaron Paul comes from the school of I'm brooding and almost crying, Sebastian Stan style. Like both of them are very good at looking upset for long periods of time. Like, Aaron Paul always looks like he's going to cry at
he does.
A particular yeah. moment. So it's like, it's in spades in this show. So if you really want to see Aaron Paul almost cry and then actually cry, watch The Path. Like, get your fill.
And Riley, what else did you watch? Something I'm super excited about.
Yeah, I watched The Invitation.
Yay!
Without being spoiled. It's been like 2 years, so I had no idea what was coming up.
How did you like it?
Yeah. Apple Cider, have you seen it?
No, I have not.
Hmm.
I
don't
want
to spoil it.
I'm trying to see if I even know what it is.
Like a dinner party.
Huh. I've never even heard of this.
Oh, well.
Huh. That's weird.
Go watch it and then come back so we can talk.
Okay, cool. I'll be back in like 2 hours.
All right, hope
some of this fine. Okay, cool. Thanks.
Gosh, yeah, I won't say too much because I really don't want to spoil it for you. Yeah, I liked it. I don't even know what I can say now.
Well, it's about like a man who's going to his ex's house, which is like a house in the Hollywood Hills, with his new girlfriend, and the ex has a new husband, and they're meeting all their friends there, and just the whole time, everything just seems wrong.
Yeah.
Like something is amiss, but the main character is the only one who really sees it. So there's a lot of like, is he imagining things? Is, you know, there's something really going on here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good. I remember seeing like Eeyore, I think she wrote a blog post about it, and like she put like at the very top of the blog post, like in capital letters, like, don't read this if you haven't watched it. So I just closed it right away. So now I feel like I have to go back and like read everything that I can find on it.
Yeah, I was actually, she did a like a 30 days of horror podcasting of just a bunch of like 5-minute episodes. I talked to her about The Invitation on it.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, I didn't listen to that. Now I can.
Do you guys do that now a lot, where like there's so many like podcasts and blogs that I watch that are about like television shows and movies and stuff, that like if I haven't seen something that they're talking about, I save it for later until after I've watched it, because then I can like gorge myself on all of the actual like reviews about it.
I do that. I with the last couple Let's Watch Two movies, they were about Civil War and Batman Mr. Superman. So like I like mulled it over for about 2 weeks, and then I finally decided, no, I'm not watching Batman versus Superman. So I just listened to the episode.
I think you made the right choice, honestly.
I don't think you're really missing out on that one.
No, you're not.
Oh, it's funny though, like there's definitely stuff that I've forgotten about and then caught up on just so I could listen to a podcast about it later. It's bad.
Yeah, like you want to listen along and be like, oh yeah, I thought that too.
exactly. But then it's like, man, where do you make time for all of this stuff now, you know? Like there's so many things coming out at all times.
Yeah.
The summer especially. Yeah. Movies, movie wise, it seems so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like, there's already, like, the three that you have talked about already, Apple Cider, like, Atomic Blonde, Spider-Man, Baby Driver, like, I want to see all of those. And then I want to see Dunkirk and someone else, that there was something else coming out. I can't remember what it was. Oh, shit. Even though I hate Johnny Depp, like, so much now, I really also want to see Pirates of the Caribbean. So, I'm pretty sure that comes out this summer, too. There's too many.
Isn't anybody going to go see the Emoji Movie?
No.
Winky face!
Oh my god. No?
I heard it was really good.
Oh my god. Are you being serious or are you just...
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Okay.
Joking. I'm so joking. Yes, I really am invested in the Emoji Movie. I love animated emojis in a 2-hour feature-length film.
No. Oh my god.
Come on, Riley. Come on. I thought you knew me better than that.
I'm sorry. Oh my god. No.
All right. Well, how about games? Anyone been playing any games?
No.
No, that was easy.
Yeah.
Count me out. Oh, wait, no. I have. I've played more of Dream Daddy.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
Yeah. I'm 6 of 7 final dates.
Oh. Yeah. I looked at the game on Steam, and I was, like, browsing through the screenshots. I was like, wow, these daddies are super handsome.
Oh, they are. I wasn't going to get the game. I wasn't. And then I was like, well, I'll get it for research, because I'm starting to work on a dating sim myself. So research,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, practical. Well, you know, it's a game. It's about, like, daddies dating daddies, and I'm not really into that. I don't know if that's, like, my thing. And then as soon as I fucking made my character and he introduced himself to the first daddy, I was like, okay, I know what this game's about. And I want to smooch this barista.
He's a, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's very cute.
He is.
He's really cute.
The daddies are too good, honestly.
I know. Like, I'm bad. Like, it's... Which, okay, so Riley, which daddy did you date first?
The first was Craig.
Okay, so bro.
Yeah, bro daddy.
Bro yeah, daddy.
Muscle daddy.
Muscle daddy, okay.
Because, and only because, so, like, you get ranked on how you do on each date.
Yeah.
So, a bunch of dates, like, I got A ranks. I did, like, a bunch of first dates with, like, everyone. And then Craig's first one, I got the S rank. And I was like, ooh, I'm good at that. And then I did the next couple dates, and, like, some of them I got, like, a C. Like, I did really bad. I think it was the aquarium date for Hugo. I did really bad. I got, like, a C. And, like, the highest, like, rankings that I got for any of them was with Craig. So I S-ranked all three of his dates. So.
Huh. Yeah. So you're not driving towards a route when you first started.
No.
Except based on skill. That's so fascinating.
Yeah, I just went with whichever one I was doing the best with.
Well, that's so different than, like, all the people I know who are playing it, like, I have to date this daddy. I have to do it regardless.
I dipped my toes into the pool with each of them.
And then you're like, I'm the best at this one, so this one's gonna go first.
That's right. That's exactly what I did.
That makes sense.
Plus, like, I've never dated a whole bunch of people, but you figure the one you do get along the best with.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, like, Craig is super hot, so.
I don't disagree with you on that one.
Yeah, I was like, no, but... this is good. And then, like, there's one thing where, like, you get hit in the head with a baseball at one point, and, like, he kisses your head.
Oh.
Yeah. So. That was one of the deciders. Yeah, that was, like, second date, I think. And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is my daddy.
I've been trying to role play as my daddy, so I'm trying to think about the things that he would say and the things that he would be into, and my reasoning would for him wanting to date Matt, the barista, is because they have, like, similar musical interests, and that's, like, a good thing to go along with, you know, and Matt's really gorgeous, and he makes puns, and, you know, my daddy loves puns! So...
It's really good.
It's a little bit goofy, but I feel like it's written by people that I think have a similar sensibility to what we like to joke about on the internet, so that makes it feel, like, so much better. And I also just like the dad character's relationship with his daughter too.
Yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, I found, like, aside from it being, like, a visual novel dating sim, there was a lot of, like, conversation about parenting as a single dad.
Mm-hmm.
Which we don't really see a lot of that in, like, any media of, like, capable single dads.
Yeah.
Like, they're kind of treated as, like, goofy and, like, can't do anything on their own kind of thing. So this was like really refreshing to kind of get that angle.
Yeah.
Because single dads are like actual people. They're not like some mysterious person that doesn't exist.
Yeah, and, mm-hmm. and all of it, like, I know a lot of the plot for the game is very contrived. Like, all of these hot dads just happen to live in houses in by themselves in one cul-de-sac in one town. Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, but where is this perfect paradise?
Yeah, exactly. Like, but on the other hand, if it means that that contrivance leads to a lot of the dialogue that they do have about, like, taking care of kids and it being difficult and that sort of thing, then I'm okay with that, you know? It's got a lot of love to it. It's a lot more than I expected, because my perception of dating sims a lot of the time, particularly with like male relationships, don't always strike me as being about that sort of thing, you know? Yeah. So it's really good.
It is good.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick that up at some point. There's just been a lot going on.
I need to see your dad, Sona.
Yeah, there's just so many, like, oh yeah, Pyre came out just in the past few days. I think it came out on Tuesday, so I spent a lot of time debating what system to get it on, because it's on PC and it's on PS4, and I couldn't decide what I wanted it on, because I usually play games in the bedroom, but only the Xbox is in there. So I finally decided I was getting it on PS4, and then I realized that it's $5 extra on PS4 for some reason. So I ended up getting it on Steam, and I set up the Steam Link that we have, which I had never used before, and it's amazing. It just lets me play all my Steam games on my big TV with a controller, and I love it now, and I'm going to use it all the time.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's really good. I don't know, I bought it for Will for like his birthday or Christmas or something a while ago, and I just never used it myself, and now I'm like, how did I go so long without without this? So Pyre is the newest game by Supergiant Games, which is the maker of Bastion and Transistor, and it's super, super beautiful. It's different than most other games I've played. Like, it's sort of RPG-ish. It's about this sort of motley crew of people who have been banished into this sort of underworld, and they're trying to earn their freedom to get back. And the main gameplay is like a 3-on-3 basketball game almost, but where you can only control one person at a time. And when I initially started playing it and I played the tutorial game, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this very much. But as it's gone on, I've been enjoying it more and more. And just, I really love all the characters, and the music is amazing, which is totally to be expected since Bastion and Transistor had such amazing music. So I put a couple hours into Pyre, and it's really good.
Yeah, it sounds like the controls and the sort of like NBA Jam sort of aspect of it is what kind of has made me hesitant. But like, how are you finding that part of it, the actual, like, the fact that it's a story but it's also like these, you know, competitive sort of matches,
but it's also Space Jam.
Yeah
I mean, narratively, they make it work pretty well, I think. It took me a bit to sort of wrap my head around how to do it, but it's because it's also partially like a strategy game in addition to like being a sports game that you play. So once I figured out strategy, like, I find the best thing to do is be defensive. So each character in your 3-on-3 has this aura around them that sort of protects them but can also damage the other team. And when you pick up the ball, or it's actually like an orb, you lose your aura, which makes you susceptible. So one of the things that I started doing to make things easier for me was to like let the other team grab the ball and then just go after whoever has the ball and like hit them with my aura, and they get banished, so they're off the field for like 10 seconds, or it depends on the character. So it's gotten better. Like I'm getting used to it. I'm not that used to playing sports games, but I do play enough strategy games that I feel like the combat's pretty enjoyable now.
That sounds really fun.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I want to play some more very soon. I've been so busy this weekend, though.
Yeah.
Just last couple things I'll mention then. I started listening to a podcast called 36 Questions, and it's made by the same people who made Limetown, which is like one of the best podcasts I've ever listened to. And this one is a musical podcast. Oh my God. And it's about these two, this estranged couple, and the woman is trying to get the man back, and she does it using these 36 questions. Apparently, this is a thing where someone made these 36 questions to make two strangers fall in love. So they are like going through the 36 questions, sort of like trying to reacquaint themselves and fall back in love. And it's very sweet. And the music's really, really good. It's got Jonathan Groff as the guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know who the girl is. Yeah, I forget who it is, and I don't see it on the page here. But it's good. I think it's only going to be like a 3-part podcast, and 2 of them have come out so far. So if you like musicals, that's a good podcast to listen to. And then my last thing is that today I was at the baseball game, and I think this might be a first for the podcast, talking about sports. But it's Will's birthday in a couple days, so though I had escaped the whole beginning of the season without having to go to an actual baseball game, we went today, and it started off very, very rough. Most of the good players, like Bautista and Donaldson, they had been benched because the trade deadline is soon, so they're probably going to be traded, and they don't want them to get injured. And they had, yeah, they've been trying to get rid of him, I think, for a little while. So now whether anyone will take him, that is a different story, because he gets paid a lot of money and hasn't been performing that well. But and then there was a new pitcher who like came out of the minors. So it got to the point in the game where it was like they gave up like 4 runs in the first inning or something. It got to the point where it was like 9-4, and Will and I are like, okay, well, if they start losing by 10, we'll leave. And then it got to a point where we were sitting in the shade for the game, but the sun just kept like creeping closer and closer and closer, and I was like, how about when the sun gets in our eyes, we leave the game? So we left at the end of the 8th inning. They were down by 4 or 5 runs, and then in the bottom of the 9th, after we left, the Blue Jays scored 7 runs.
Oh, no.
Including a walk-off grand slam.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
So, yeah. We're just, like, giving up on them the whole time. We're just like, this is garbage. They're going to lose. But no, they came back and won in like the most exciting way you can possibly win a baseball game.
I'm so sorry for you guys. That's awful.
Yeah. So that was a thing. But rather than a walk-off grand slam, I saw someone get hit in the head with a baseball 2 seats ahead of me.
Oh,
so
my God.
That was a thing.
Toronto baseball, everyone.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't believe that.
Yeah. All right, so I guess that's it for what we've been doing. We just had a few listener questions that we'll go over before we wrap it up. Riley, did you want to start?
Sure. The first question is from Miles from Flock Talk from the, I assume, the Cartridge Club forums. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just finished Glow and I loved it. If you were wrestlers, what would your names or gimmicks be? Oh my God. I don't know. Gosh.
I think my name would be Pambot, and I would be an android.
Yes!
I've been told by many people, most usually Will, that I am a robot because I don't display any emotions, so I would play that up.
Pambot the android.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I don't know. I don't know. Oh, okay. I don't know. A name I might have to think about a little bit more. But my gimmick would be, like, procrastinating. So, like, leaving everything till the very last minute. That feels too real, but it's true.
So you'd be, like, in a tag team match, and you would just, like, not be there. Until...
That's right. Yep. Yeah, until like, the match my teammate would be getting, like, choked out, and then I would come in.
You would just show up late with Starbucks? Like, just, like, well, I don't know. In that case, Tim Hortons, I guess. I don't know if that's an analogous thing to showing up late with Starbucks, but...
I feel, yes, very similar, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, something like, I don't know, Timely Riley, yeah.
Timely Riley.
Yeah.
What about you, Apple Cider?
I gotta go with Extreme Feminist.
Oh, like, I do. Yes.
Good.
Like... I would just, like, so it sort of be a little bit of kind of, like, the persona from maybe, like, roller derby.
Yeah.
And then just sort of transpose it into, like, a very extreme feminist sort of version. So I would, like, jump off the top rope and hit people with, like, a copy of, like, Everybody is a Feminist by Bell Hooks. Like, uh-huh. That would be, like, my thing. Like, you know, like, I would yell so all the men would get out of the audience. That sort of thing. You know, like, yeah. You know, play up being a heel. That would be, I think that would be my, amazing. My role really well. Yeah,
yeah, I love it.
That sounds great.
Yeah, that's good.
The next question is from Orkchop, who asks, what book would you really want to see a film or TV adaptation of?
Phantom Tollbooth.
Oh, yes.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking about it because of the Wrinkle in Time thing being made by Ava DuVernay. Like, just kids, you know, books from my childhood have been, like, there's a bunch that have been remade as films, like Beezus and Ramona and the Giver and obviously now Wrinkle in Time, but Phantom Tollbooth. We need to see that on the big screen.
Amazing.
Yeah, because they're also making a film adaptation of one of my favorite comic books, which is The Runaways. So
yeah,
that like if I had to make a feature film of like a book that I really like, even a comic book, it would be The Runaways. But they're actually making it now, so I have to like think of like a new wish list. I have to come up with a whole new wish list for things. So.
Gosh, like, all, like, the books that I read as a kid, like, I feel like, I grew up with the Harry Potter books. Those are already, like, a show. Lord of the Rings, that's already a thing. like, what else did I read? Like, I don't, they're making something with Wheel of Time. And then... I don't want to see Terry Goodkind stuff come to any screen, no. And then, like, what else have I read? Oh, maybe, actually, Dragon Riders of Pern, I think, might be cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad at all.
Yeah, yeah. Just, like, yeah, I think that'd be cool. Yeah. Especially now with, like, the technology that we have. I think that could be pretty believably done. So, yeah. Let's see some more dragons on TV.
And I'd like to see Perdido Street Station made into probably a series, because it would be too much for a movie. But that's just a really great sort of fantasy, weird fiction book with, like, this amazing, amazing world building and all kinds of, like, cool creatures and concepts and things. And I think that could make a really interesting show.
Mm-hmm. Where does that take place? Like, the books?
It's a fake place. It's an ancient city called New Crobazon.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, that sounds like really... I didn't know if it was like urban fantasy or if it was like fantasy.
Mm. Yeah, it's like fantasy. Mm. Cool. So it's got all these like different kinds of species and things that are that live in the city. And it's just, it's really great. There would be just, even if they didn't take the main story from the book, just like I think taking the world from it would have the potential to be something very good.
We need another series like that that has like involvement by like either like Weta Workshop or Jim Henson's Creature Studio or yeah. something like that. Yeah, like I feel like we haven't seen a good series with that stuff in a while.
Mm-hmm. Man, bring back Dark Crystal. Yes.
Oh yeah.
God, I love that movie so much. Our next question is from Dia Lucina, and she asks, what is your favorite Overwatch ship and why?
Oh god.
Would you like to go first, Applehead?
Yeah. I got asked this question too when I was on Waypoint Radio, and man, my answer changes like week to week.
I mean, there's a lot to choose from.
There's a lot. There's a lot to choose from. That's the problem. Is yeah. like, first I was really into Pharmacy, which is Farron Mercy, and then I was really into Mercy Maker, which is Widowmaker Mercy. Right now, I think I'm into Spider Bite, which is Widowmaker and Sombra. But honestly, I want to just ship the entire Team Talon together. Like, this, yeah, just all of them. Just all dating each other. Like, I really like that dynamic. Like, if they are all, like, they all were, like, part of, like, a soap opera where they're all, like, dating each other or, you know, have it. Like, so many people have done, like, fan art comics of, like, them all living together in kind of, like, a Friends-style sitcom sort of way. So, yeah, that's kind of, that's kind of where I get a lot of that idea from. It's just, like, I really like that kind of dynamic. So, yeah, I really like Spider-Bite just because I think, like, I've seen some, like, really good art from this one artist named Teslin. She does the most amazing Widowmaker art, and she does a lot of, like, Spider-Bite art, and, it really kind of takes the dynamic of Widowmaker and Sombra to, like, this different level because of Sombra's inherent, like, hacking capabilities. And so the whole, like, fantasy of that ship in kind of her art is that Sombra is helping Widowmaker recover her memories and stuff like that. So I think that's really cool. What about you?
I really like the Pharmacy ship. One thing that I've noticed about that ship in particular is that during matches and like competitive matches and stuff, people mm-hmm. will say, "Oh, they have a Pharmacy."
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're saying their ship name, bud. Did you know that? So I love that that's become like a thing that people say all the time.
Yeah.
I also really like the Mei and Zarya ship with like Zarya like lifting Mei up. I think that's adorable. It's so cute and like I just love it so much. And Tracer has a girlfriend, so I'm like, you can have your girlfriend, that's fine.
We won't force you to be with someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if people want to ship Tracer with others, that's cool, but, like, Tracer's got a girlfriend now, so.
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
Yeah, I'm not really up on all the ships besides the sort of obvious ones, like, pharmacy. I've read a small amount of like Overwatch smutty fan fiction, and that's like that's bless. It. Like nothing sweet. I just like if it's not smutty, I'm not interested. So basically, I just want everyone to kiss each other.
That's not a bad choice, fair. Honestly. Yeah, that's not a bad choice as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Like, if you make a good piece of art or a good piece of fanfic, I'll believe it. Like, I will go with you there. You just gotta sell me on it. That's always been my thing. You just gotta sell me on it. You just gotta give me a hook, and I'll be right there supporting you.
All right, the next question is another one from Orkchop, who asks, which Overwatch voice artist would you most like to meet?
I really want to meet Tracer's voice artist, like, just because I love Tracer, so. And then, like, most realistically, D.Va's voice actress, Charlotte Chung.
Yeah.
She's coming to Fan Expo in Toronto in September, so I was like, I could probably go meet her too. And also, like, D.Va's so cool, so I'm like, Tracer's, and then, like, more practically, like, because her voice actress is coming here, D.Va's. Yeah.
I feel like whenever there are those great videos of all the voice artists, it's usually Lucio or Sombra who's like the ringleaders of them. So I feel like they look the most fun. So I would say them.
I would say Symmetra's, because she is like so funny and so sweet. Like, I also would want to meet Reaper's voice actor. Mm. Because he doesn't do as much of the promotional stuff as anybody else, but the guy is a prolific voice actor, and he's unbelievably talented. Like, the dude does, his specialty is doing voices that sound like somebody else. Like, he did a bunch of, like, celebrity impersonations for Robot Chicken, and he's also done a bunch of, like, young kid cartoon stuff. So think about the guy that does Reaper doing the voice of, like, Blue from, like, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. That's the same guy. So I would want to talk to him about, like, the legacy and the craft of being, like, a voice actor in the industry for, like, you know, 15, 20 years now. Like, that, because that's impressive.
Yeah. That's cool. I didn't realize he did so much. Like, aside from Overwatch, like, and so different, like, different
things. Like, he's definitely, like, somebody who has a really long career of doing voices, and I feel like he doesn't get enough recognition for what he does. Like, that and, like, I also really like May's voice actress. She's so adorable! Like, that video she did where she was explaining what the Lunar New Year was in China. Like, I thought that was adorable. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my god, you're so cool. So, yeah, like, I think she's awesome. So I'd want to meet her, too. Yeah.
The next question. Okay, so all the questions coming up are from Orkchop. The second last one is, would you want to be a professional Overwatch player in the Overwatch League?
I'm not good enough to be a professional.
But if you were, player say, in the Overwatch say you League. Were, say you were. For the fantasy of the question.
For the fantasy of the question. Okay, well, first I'll just say that when this Overwatch League thing came out, and it was like they were using very specific language about, like, I don't know, it that made it seem like, hey, maybe I could be in the Overwatch League. Yes. And then it was like, no, you can't. But, like, they just came out with the salaries and things. Like, everyone needs to make at least $50,000 a year and have their housing and food paid for and get benefits, which sounds like a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, especially in the United States.
Yeah. So for that reason, maybe. I mean, I don't think I would want to do that. That seems like a lot of pressure. Like, the only thing that would make me want to do it is to, like, have more women's representation, yeah. but like I don't think I would want to be a professional video game player. I don't even like playing video games in front of people.
Yeah. Also, I the average age of when people end their esports careers is like 26. Oh, because so, of yeah. your hands.
We're all
your
hands. We're over the hill.
Yeah, we're over the hill. So I would love to, I would not want to be a professional Overwatch player. I want to be a caster.
Yes.
I want to be an Overwatch caster.
That would be really fun.
So if there's anybody listening to this podcast who can hook me up with that, you know where to find me. Wink.
Winky face.
I like if you could like flip back maybe to like where I would be able to do that with like, you know, like have your hands be in good condition and whatever. Then yeah, like hell yeah, I would. Because if like if that was the only thing going on at the time, like yeah, I would do that. For sure. And like I think it would be like super stressful. I'm not entirely sure that I have like the right temperament for that kind of thing, especially if like you didn't have a good coach.
Yeah.
So it would depend on like the team that I had, but yeah, I think that would be really fun. And like it would be cool to like go all these different places and play video games, like
yeah,
you know, like, yeah, fuck yeah I would.
Yeah, this, I mean, it seems like, yeah, if I was a younger person that grew up in a slightly younger generation than the one that I did now, it sounds like it would be really fun, but that stress would probably crush me.
Yeah.
Plus, yeah,
realistically,
like,
it would not be
yeah, bad, realistically, it would crush me. It would just fucking crush me outright. You know, like, it sounds like they also have no time for anything. Like,
yeah,
even the American, American esports teams that I've heard about. But then you look at someplace like South Korea, they are actively discouraged from having relationships with people. Like, because of the idol status stuff, that sounds so sad and lonely. Like, that sounds really lonely and awful. So, yeah, maybe not for me. I don't know.
Huh. All right. And the last question is, what is your favorite game soundtrack?
For me, does a trilogy of games count, or do I have to pick one?
I wonder what you're gonna say.
I really love the music from Mass Effect 3. Not 2, not 1. 3. I mean, I love all like the music, from the entire series, but 3 in particular has like this mix of orchestral music and like synth strings and stuff going on that the other two games don't have, and for me that mix makes it the best out of all three, although Mass Effect 2 is definitely a close second because it's the best game of the trilogy. But the music in 3 is just, I love it so much. And, like, if I put it on, I'm, like, instantly transported back to any moment in the game that music is from. And, like, you know, it just, like, gets right in there and, like, right under your skin and reminds you that, like, you spent 5 hours crying in your bed after playing this game.
And my favorite is Bastion. That's the soundtrack that's always stuck with me. That's one of the only game soundtracks I've ever purchased and will just like listen to while I'm driving around in my car. It's got great orchestral stuff, and then the couple songs that actually have lyrics are just beautiful. And the I love the singer in those whose name I can't remember off the top of my head, but that one's my favorite.
Transistor. I mean, Darren Korb just makes good soundtracks. Like, that's just his thing. So, or, furthermore, unpopular opinion, I like World of Warcraft's music too. Like, I,
it's, yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, and there's just so much of it, yeah, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a few tracks there that stand out to me, and oh, this is where my bad memory comes in. No, I'm not going to even be able to describe it. Just stop. Forget I'm talking. It's in...
In Northrend?
Northrend.
Grizzly Hills?
Yes. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. That was easy.
That one, yeah. That very whole good zone is... The music there is so beautiful.
Yeah. I also like Arthas's theme, like the invincible music that like plays when he's dead.
Yeah.
That one's really good too. That makes me cry actually, which is weird because I hate Arthas and I hate that whole fucking story, but like, but I really like the music. The music's real good. So.
And I also like Taran's theme, and there's one area, like a Night Elf area, not the very beginning one, but like the just leveled over that, like level 12 area or something.
Ashenvale?
Yeah, that's it.
When it was a level 13 area, I think it's higher now.
Yeah,
that was a good zone, too, before they fucked it up with the fire. Blizzard.
All right, so that's all our questions. Thank you so much, Apple Cider, for coming on the podcast again.
Oh, no problem. I love being here and talking with you folks. So.
Yay. We're going to need to come up with a new title for you when you get to 5.
Leveled up. I've leveled up as a podcast guest.
Yeah. Do you want to tell people where they can find you online?
Mm-hmm. If you want to find me on Twitter, I am Apple Cider Witch on Twitter. And if you want to read any of my writing, all of my links are on my personal site, which is ciderandlemonade.com.
And Riley?
You can find me on Twitter at Clary, it's K-L-E-R-I with an underscore, and also at Twitch, where I'm still streaming, learning Korean. It's twitch.tv/Clary, this time with no underscore, so just K-A-L-E-R-I.
And you can find me on Twitter at Josyla underscore, although I might see if Pambot is taken. And you can find me on YouTube, where my channel is called Cannot Be Tamed. And if you have any feedback or questions for us, you can reach out at MediaMavensCast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at _MediaMavens. There is also a forum for discussion of any of our episodes at CartridgeClub.org. And if you like the show, please do leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.